Harris called the senior officers to a meeting in her office. Commander Seabolt, who looked as if he'd been razor-cut from a recruiting poster, folded himself carefully into the chair to her left, and Harris immediately catalogued him as a regulator. Lieutenant Commander Winslow, senior weapons officer, could have been cut from the same mold, though she had a twinkle in her eye. Major Suspero, communications, had the slightly rumpled, twitchy look that Harris associated with really good comtech personnel. Major Vonden, scan, was much the same, but taller. In engineering, she had Major Foxen, quiet and gray-haired. Her chief environmental officer, Lieutenant Commander Donaghy, was a cheerful, chunky woman who arrived minutes later than everyone else to a disapproving look from Seabolt.
Sorry, Captain. They just sent another batch of potential moles down, and I was trying to sort them out.
Take a seat.
Harris turned to Seabolt.
Commander Seabolt, tell me about your previous assignment.
I was aide-de-camp to Admiral Markham. The Admiral has been second in command of Sector 4 HQ for the past 4 years.
And your last ship assignment?
That would be 8 years ago, Captain. I was on the Picardy Rose with Captain Graham.
Command track? Technical?
Command track. I was fourth officer. Picardy Rose was a patrol craft on picket duty in the frontier.
See any action?
No, sir, but Captain Graham ran a very tight ship, and we were always commended for our standards at the annual inspections.
Harris would much rather have had a messy combat veteran, but she nodded her thanks and transferred her gaze to Eugenie Winslow.
And you, Commander?
I was en route from the gunnery school, where I did a round as instructor, to my new ship assignment. It would have been Summerwine. My last ship assignment was on Rose of Glory, and before that, on Alert. We saw no action, though Rose did win the Sector Gunnery Medal. I haven't been on a cruiser since I was a jig, but I assure the captain that I'm quite familiar with cruiser weaponry.
Very good.
It wasn't good at all, but at least Winslow seemed willing and a bit sharper than Seabolt.
Are you satisfied with your junior's competence, Commander?
Captain, I couldn't fill a single watch with experienced weapons personnel. It's as if they just grabbed everyone within reach to fill out the numbers. However, the most experienced NCO tells me that if we're granted a few weeks for training, we should do reasonably well.
Kick them along faster. We may not have a few weeks. And if you find someone else aboard with more weapons training who was misassigned, come tell me about it. We may have to shift people around.
We're short of replacement parts, too. We'd be shorter if I haven't spotted the last load departing just as I came aboard.
Good work, Commander.
Harris let her gaze move on to Lieutenant Commander DeFreeze, the senior navigator.
I've been on cruisers, most recently Royal Reef, but the last time I saw action was in Clarion, during the Patchcock mess.
Have you had micro-jump weapons track drills recently?
No, sir, and I was only the third nav officer at Patchcock. However, I did bring aboard a full set of training sims, and four of my enlisted personnel have more recent combat experience than I have.
Good. I'll be ordering some dry drills with other ships.
Yes, sir.
Major Foxen, let's hear about you.
Captain, all my service has been on cruisers of this class. I was on Imperator last, and was transferred here because I'd been through the drives refitting on Imp, and they thought I'd be good to take over Indy's new drives.
So what do you think of them?
A definite improvement over the old captain, but they rushed the last part of the job, what with the mutiny. Your in-system's fine, but the FDL drive isn't quite balanced. It'll get us there, but it'll leave a marked signature. And my guess is it's going to degrade over time. We should have quite a flutter after a dozen long jumps or so.
Why'd you accept it, then?
Sir, I came aboard 2 days after the refit crew signed off on it, or I wouldn't have. And I can't say it's not safe. There was the same modification to Imp, and while the trials showed our scan trace looked like a skip jumper, the ship herself was steady as a rock, and it never failed. That was 2 years ago, standard. They did take it back in and fix it, but now, with the mutiny and all, I imagine they'll refuse to delay.
Foxen was probably right. And after all, he was coming along. If the drive failed and stranded them in some strange corner of the universe, he'd be there too. That left Elise Donaghy.
Well, to be honest, sir, the last time I had cruiser duty was 6 years ago. Since then, I've been working with environmental systems design for deep space repair ships. I've probably forgotten which pipes run where, but I'm positive I can pick it up again in no time.
Harris wanted to bang her head on the desk in sheer frustration, but she knew better. The lives of her little flotilla depended on her ability to tolerate frustration and make silk purses out of very crooked sow's ears. She could have done it with her old crew, or for that matter, with any capable crew used to working together. She shook her head. No use thinking what might have been. She had the resources she had, pitiful as they were. The other ships in the group seemed less disorganized than her own. At least that meant she had the worst problems closest at hand, where she could work on them directly. An hour before mid-third shift, Harris's alarm woke her from a pleasant dream in which she and Petrus chased each other along a beach, in and out of warm, clear wavelets. The whole setting looked like a travel poster in shades of blue and turquoise and white. She pushed her face back into the pillow for a moment, but she was awake. And now that she was awake, she remembered why she'd set the alarm. The environmental parameters at the start of first shift were always off, though the record books had been neatly initialed beside a record of perfect values all through third shift. Harris splashed cold water on her face from the carafe of ice water she kept beside her bunk and put on a clean uniform. If one was going to appear like the wrath of gods to a slacking third shift crew, a clean uniform enhanced the effect. Seabolt's natural knife crease style would have worked, but Seabolt was convinced the initialed log sheets meant something was wrong with the machinery. Harris clipped on her tagger and comm unit, Bridge had to know where the captain was, and pulled a pair of softies over her uniform boots. Most third shift crew wore softies to reduce noise, and it certainly made sneaking up on wrongdoers easier. She went aft, meeting, as she expected, no one at that hour in officer country. Down the nearest personnel ladder, one deck, two, and out into the port passage of environmental. Harris stood a moment, listening, feeling it through the soles of her feet, and with one finger on the bulkhead, a trick she'd been taught as a jig by a grizzled master chief. Open the mouth, turn the head from side to side, and irregularities in the pump could be diagnosed from here. It all sounded normal, though. She turned to her left and saw that the hatch to the personnel lock separating the main port passage from the main starboard passage was open. She looked at the status telltales. All four green.
Not good.
Someone had left the whole lock open as a convenience and a very definite danger. She looked at the hatch mechanisms. They should have closed the hatches automatically, but someone had stuck a stylus in the mechanism to hold them open. And someone had put a sticky patch over the sensor that should have picked up the telltale lights. Seabolt would assume sabotage and conspiracy, but Harris knew laziness was far more likely. Someone didn't want to wait while the locks cycled properly to give access from one side to the other. She'd find the forward lock jammed open too, no doubt. Instead of walking the complete round to make the required checks, someone was darting through to sign off the log at the other side. Harris stepped back through to the port passage, pulled out the roll of tack tape, and laid a strip on each of the five bottom rungs of the ladder and along the underside of the handholds, just where fingers would grip. Then she went back in the lock, removed the stylus from that hatch, swung it closed, and dogged it behind her. She put a line of tack tape on the wheel, very carefully. She left the sticky patch alone, went into the lock itself, closed and dogged that hatch, and marked its wheel with tack tape. Coming out the starboard side of the lock, she couldn't dog the hatches behind her, but she put a line of tack tape under each pull, shutting the hatches so the next user would have to pull them open. It was pure guess which corridor the slack environmental crew would be in, but in either case, she should be able to find them before the mid-shift bell, and if she didn't, they'd respond to that with the usual report. She opened the service hatch at the end of the starboard compartment and found, as she should, nothing but the great rounded haunch of one of the settling tanks. She closed the hatch carefully and headed back forward as quietly as possible, listening for anything but the heavy heartbeat of the pumps, the whoosh and gurgle of liquids, the hiss and bubble of gas exchange. Outboard on her right were transparent tubes and containers glowing green or blue or amber with the various cultures in them, brightly backlit by the lights that optimized their growth. Beyond, the gleaming curves of more pipes, pumps, countercurrent exchange chambers. Beyond, invisible from here, were the honeycomb trickle beds, settling tanks aft, mixing tanks forward. Inboard, the space from deck to overhead was filled with the secondary atmospheric system, canisters, pipes, and the food processing sections, neat rectangles of hydroponic beds. Environmental was, arguably, the smelliest place on a ship. A healthy system smelled like a spring day in the country on a well-terraformed planet. A rich mix of odors from musky to astringent, but nothing actually unpleasant. The best environmental techs she'd known could diagnose a problem with just a quick sniff, recognizing at once which sludge chamber or bacterial strain was out of kilter. Here, her nose wrinkled involuntarily, among all the yeasty, earthy, pungent odors that belonged here was an acrid one. A scorched smell, as if a cook had singed not just a steak, but his beard. She sniffed her way toward it. Acrid, yes, and faintly metallic. Her mind rummaged through a library of smells and sounds. She could almost see it at work. Then it came to her.
Brazing? Soldering?
Something with a little blowtorch and lengths of tubing. Something that was never done here on environmental because... She strained for the memory of a text she'd read.
But, sir, the manual says...
Corporal, do you see these stripes?
Yes, sir. But, sir, if the metal vapor comes in contact with...
Just do it!
Harris moved fast and saw them, a cluster of figures around one of the pipes connecting two chambers.